This is VOA News via remote. I'm Marissa Melton. Ukraine's foreign minister says the Zaporizhia nuclear plant, the largest one in Europe, is on fire following a Russian attack. Foreign Minister Dmytro Kuleba said Russian forces are still firing on the plant from all sides. He called for the Russians to cease fire immediately so firefighters could establish a security zone. The International Atomic Energy Agency said in a tweet that it is aware of reports of shelling at the power plant and was in contact with Ukrainian authorities about the situation. So far, there are no reports of increased radiation at the plant. And the White House is continuing to monitor the situation closely and has also confirmed that there are no indications of elevated levels of radiation at the power plant. U.S. President Joe Biden received an update from the Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky late on Thursday about that reported fire at the Zaporizhia nuclear plant. The U.S. Department of Homeland Security said Thursday that the Biden administration will grant temporary deportation relief and work permits to tens of thousands of Ukrainians who are in the United States and unable to return to Ukraine due to the military conflict with Russia. The move will allow Ukrainians in the United States as of March the 1st to remain in the U.S. and work legally for a period of a year and a half. Russian forces invaded Ukraine on February 24th in one of the broadest attacks on a European state since World War II. The status is known as temporary protected status, and it's given to immigrants who cannot return to their country safely due to extraordinary circumstances, including violent conflict and natural disasters. You're listening to VOA News. A former Louisville, Kentucky police officer has been cleared of charges related to the Breonna Taylor raid. AP correspondent Mike Gracia has more on that story.
We, the jury, found the defendant, Brett Hankison, not guilty of...
A jury of eight men and four women found former Louisville police officer Brett Hankison not guilty of charges that he endangered neighbors when he fired into Breonna Taylor's apartment during a botched drug raid that resulted in Taylor's death. The jury reached the verdict after about 3 hours of deliberation. Hankison did not fire any of the bullets that killed the 26-year-old Taylor on March 13, 2020. None of the officers involved in the raid were charged with Taylor's death. Hankison's acquittal likely ends the possibility of state criminal charges against any of the officers involved in the raid. A federal investigation into whether the officers violated Taylor's civil rights is underway. I'm Mike Gracia.
Purdue Pharma has agreed to a larger settlement and in a deal intended to stanch a flood of lawsuits facing the maker of OxyContin. AP correspondent Jennifer King has that story.
Connecticut will force Purdue Pharma and the Sacklers to pay $6 billion for their role in the opioid and addiction crisis.
At a news conference in Hartford, Connecticut Attorney General William Tong says that after states appealed an earlier settlement with Purdue Pharma, the revised deal will give victims of the opioid crisis and their families a chance to address members of the Sackler family ownership directly in a court forum, something they have not been able to do previously.
Some of them have lost so much.
The new deal protects members of the Sackler family from civil lawsuits. In return, they upped their cash contribution and will be forced to give up control of the Connecticut-based company so it can be turned into a new entity. The new settlement requires approval from U.S. bankruptcy judge Robert Drain. I'm Jennifer King.
The Pentagon announced Thursday it is postponing a nuclear missile test launch scheduled for this week. That decision comes days after Russian President Vladimir Putin's decision to put his nuclear forces on higher alert. Pentagon Press Secretary John Kirby said the decision to delay the test of a Minuteman III intercontinental ballistic missile was made by Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin. Kirby added that the United States would like to see Moscow reciprocate by taking the temperature down in the crisis over Ukraine. Another factor that may be helping the Ukrainians is continued support from NATO and the United States. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention said Thursday that more than 90% of the U.S. population is in a location where COVID-19 levels are low enough that people do not need to wear masks. Via remote, I'm Marissa Melton, VOA News.
Thank you. Today is Friday, March 4th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Afo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, the U.S. slams more sanctions on President Putin's inner circle as his forces continue Ukraine invasion.
The list includes billionaire Putin ally Alisher Usmanov, the owner of one of the world's biggest yachts, which Germany has already seized. The steps will keep dozens of oligarchs and family members from traveling to the U.S.
Turkey locks Russian warships out of the Black Sea ahead of an expected assault on Ukrainian cities.
The announcement follows Turkey's curtailing of Russian naval vessels' use of Istanbul's Bosphorus waterway, the only access to the Black Sea.
And Western Australia lifts the nation's toughest COVID-19 border controls after almost 2 years. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. The Biden administration is ordering new sanctions against Russian oligarchs and others in President Vladimir Putin's inner circle as Russian troops pummel Ukraine. Those targeted by the new measures include Putin's press secretary, Dmitry Peskov, and Alisha Bohanovich Usmanov, one of Russia's wealthiest individuals and a close ally of Putin. The U.S. State Department also announced it was imposing visa bans on 19 Russian oligarchs and dozens of their family members and close associates. Associated Press Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports from the White House.
President Biden says new sanctions target Russian oligarchs and others, including Putin's press secretary.
The goal was to maximize the impact on Putin and Russia and minimize the harm on us and our allies and friends around the world.
The list includes billionaire Putin ally Alisher Usmanov, the owner of one of the world's biggest yachts, which Germany has already seized. The steps will keep dozens of oligarchs and family members from traveling to the U.S. while cutting them off from America's financial system and freezing their assets here. Sagar Magani at the White House.
1 week into Moscow's invasion of Ukraine, Russian forces continue their push despite condemnation from the United Nations General Assembly, which voted overwhelmingly to reprimand Russia for invading Ukraine. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Barb has the latest.
Russian shelling hammering Ukraine. With reports, the southern city of Kherson has fallen to the Russian military. Thousands of civilians killed or wounded since the invasion began, Ukrainian authorities say. Babies like this one in Kyiv, born in the cellars of hospitals, as Ukrainians in cities across the country are forced underground.
Sheltering wherever they can, including children receiving cancer treatment, who are now living in the basements of Ukraine's children's hospitals, with doctors and nurses doing their best to care for them as explosions boom overhead. This is shameful.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken announced further sanctions on Russian businesses, this time on 22 defense-related entities that make the combat weapons used to attack the Ukrainian people. A ban on Russian aircraft entering American airspace now in place, with Belarus also sanctioned for its role in enabling the Russian invasion. Near Kyiv, U.S. officials say a convoy of Russian military vehicles more than 60 kilometers long has stalled due to fuel and food shortages and resistance from Ukrainians. Linda Thomas Greenfield is the U.S. ambassador to the U.N.
To the Russian soldiers sent to the front lines of an unjust, unnecessary war, I say your leaders are lying to you. Do not commit war crimes. Do everything you can to put down your weapons and leave Ukraine.
The Pentagon Thursday slammed Russian President Vladimir Putin's order earlier this week to place his nuclear forces on increased alert. Pentagon Press Secretary John Kirby.
Such provocative rhetoric and possible changes to nuclear posture involving the most consequential weapons in our respective arsenals is unacceptable. The United States has not taken any similar steps.
Kirby announced that the Pentagon would postpone a scheduled intercontinental ballistic missile test this week as a sign the U.S. would not engage in nuclear behavior that could be misunderstood.
We did not take this decision lightly, but instead to demonstrate that we are a responsible nuclear power.
The U.S. continues to send assistance to Ukrainian forces while warning that Russian fighters will learn from their initial failures. Carla Babb, VOA News, The Pentagon.
Turkey says it has locked Russian warships out of the Black Sea ahead of an expected assault on Ukrainian cities. At the same time, Ukraine says it is getting more Turkish drones despite warnings from Moscow. As Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul, Turkish-Russian ties are facing a critical test.
Ankara claims four Russian warships have withdrawn their request to enter the Black Sea through Turkish waterways. The announcement follows Turkey's curtailing of Russian naval vessels' use of Istanbul's Bosphorus waterway, the only access to the Black Sea. Under the 1936 Montreux Convention, Ankara can stop Russian naval ships from using the waterway after it declared on Sunday that Russia's invasion of Ukraine was a war. Mesut Çarşın, an advisor to Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, says Turkey intends to strictly enforce naval access to the Black Sea under the convention.
We will apply all the principles of the current regime. The Russians should be thinking about this. Why we show this position in the World War II? We stopped the German ships, we stopped the Italian ships, even the Soviet army ships.
Ankara's strict enforcement of the convention appears to have denied any wiggle room for Moscow to access its waiting destroyers and a frigate. Among them is one of Russia's most advanced and modern warships that carries cruise missiles. The ships were expected to join a fleet of warships already massed outside the Ukrainian city of Odessa, ahead of an expected assault. In addition, Kiev's announcement Wednesday that Turkish-made armed drones will be delivered is likely to irk Moscow further. Turkish defense analyst Ardar Mevlutoğlu says the drones pose a threat to Russian forces.
A single armed drone equipped with a couple of bombs may destroy a whole air defense battery or a very expensive electronic warfare system or take out some armored vehicles, etc.
The Ukrainian Defense Ministry has posted videos of Turkish-made drones targeting Russian forces. Last week, Moscow warned countries supplying Ukraine with weapons would be held responsible for losses. Ankara has not commented on Ukrainian claims of a new drone delivery. Turkey, while a NATO member, has close ties with Russia. But Erdogan has strongly criticized Russia's Ukraine invasion. Asla Aydıntaşbaş, a senior fellow of the Council of Europe, says the diplomatic stakes are high for Turkish diplomacy.
This will be a balancing act for Turkey. Clearly, the defense aid may happen, but not at a level that would irritate Russia. So Turkey will push it enough, but stop when it becomes existentially important for Russia in order to prevent them from retaliating in Syria or with natural gas.
Turkey imports more than 90% of its energy, and Russia's one of its main suppliers. At the same time, analysts say Ankara is pressing Moscow to use its influence to keep Damascus from moving in on the last rebel holdouts in Idlib, along Syria's border with Turkey, an action that could trigger a new flow of refugees into Turkish territory. Dorian Jones of VOA News, Istanbul.
UN High Commissioner for Human Rights Michelle Bachelet warns Russia's invasion of Ukraine is the most serious threat to peace and security the world has faced in decades. Bachelet spoke Thursday at the start of an urgent debate at the UN Human Rights Council on the crisis in Ukraine. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
UN Human Rights Chief Michelle Bachelet told the UN Human Rights Council Russia's military attack on Ukraine opened a new and dangerous chapter. Since Russian troops invaded the country a week ago, the High Commissioner's office has recorded more than 800 civilian casualties, including 249 killed, noting the true figure was likely much higher. Bachelet said Russia was using heavy artillery, multi-launch rocket systems, and airstrikes in populated areas. This, she noted, has caused many civilian casualties, as well as damaged and destroyed residential areas and civilian infrastructure. She said it also has caused fear in the hearts of Ukrainians, more than a million of whom have fled to neighboring countries in search of safety.
Tens of millions of people remain in the country, in potentially mortal danger. I'm deeply concerned that the current escalation of military operations will further heighten the harm they face. Thousands of people, including older people, pregnant women, as well as children and people with disabilities, are being forced to gather in underground shelters and subway stations to escape explosion.
Bachelet expressed concern about reports of African and Asian nationals facing discrimination while fleeing. She said all those fleeing conflict must be welcomed regardless of their race and ethnicity. Russia's ambassador to the UN in Geneva, Gennady Gatilov, accused Ukraine's government of virtually exterminating Ukraine's Russian-speaking population since 2014. That was when Russia illegally annexed the Crimean Peninsula and war began between Russian-backed separatists in Ukraine's Donbas region and the government in Kyiv. Gatilov said the Human Rights Council was aware of these alleged crimes but did nothing to stop it. He spoke through an interpreter.
Why, instead of upholding the rights and freedoms of Ukrainians and protecting their lives, did you and do you continue to pander to the criminal regime in Kyiv, shamefully closing your eyes to its crimes?
Russia has never presented evidence that Ukraine is carrying out a genocide in Donbas, and Ukraine denies the Russian claims. In a video link from Kyiv, Ukrainian First Deputy Minister of Foreign Affairs, Emin Zaparova, spoke about the suffering she and her compatriots are forced to endure to survive. She said Russia has underestimated Ukrainians' will to resist and to fight for the freedom and independence of their country.
Recent events clearly point to the fact that the Russian troops fighting in Ukraine carry out the most blatant violations and abuses of human rights, systematically engage in acts that clearly amount to war crimes and crimes against humanity.
The Ukrainian minister welcomed the investigation launched by the International Criminal Court into alleged Russian war crimes in Ukraine. She said the adoption of a resolution by the Human Rights Council to establish a commission of inquiry into alleged human rights law violations by Russia also would be a positive step. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The ongoing conflict between Russia and Ukraine has left oil and gas markets in the Middle East uncertain and unstable, causing supply issues and price spikes, with oil reaching levels of more than $110 a barrel Thursday. The uncertain duration of the conflict, though, makes it difficult to predict how much of the disruption will be permanent and how much is just temporary. Edward Uranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
Oil and gas-producing countries in the Middle East are witnessing a spike in energy prices to upwards of $110 a barrel and possibly a long-term disruption of energy markets due to uncertainty over Western sanctions on Russia. Washington-based Gulf analyst Theodore Karasik tells VOA there are many wild cards in the ongoing military operation that could drive energy prices up even further. He argues that in any case, there are big changes occurring in the energy industry.
The energy situation and the pricing is contingent upon how long this goes for and to what degree it ends. We've already seen extensive sanctions put on Russia because of its actions in Ukraine. Those sanctions against Russia in the energy field is going to affect the way the Russian energy industry operates, and we just don't have a clear picture of that yet.
Karasik also notes that a possible agreement with Iran to return to the 2015 nuclear deal, JCPOA, could eventually affect energy supplies and prices. Paul Sullivan, a Washington-based Middle East analyst, argues that there is no end to the number of wild cards that could change the energy situation. The conflict increases risk and therefore costs of energy by adding risk premiums, he says. On the flip side, sanctions on Russia, he adds, could hammer the world economy and push energy prices down. Meanwhile, some oil and gas companies are leaving Russia or divesting from Russia, and that could disrupt supply chains. Sullivan goes on to say that potential terror acts on Russia towards pipelines could push prices up, while Turkey closing off the straits to Russian warships could also affect energy ships as well. Egyptian political sociologist Saeed Sadiq tells VOA that countries in North Africa, like Egypt and Algeria, are being sought out to increase their gas exports to Europe to compensate for Russian gas, which makes up 40% of European imports.
North African states that produce gas, Algeria, Egypt. Egypt has limited stock, but they have been increasing by 365% liquefied gas, because 90% of Egyptian gas is used domestically. 10% is exported, and then we get gas from Israel and Cyprus and transfer it into liquefied gas and exported.
Sadiq adds that Qatar also is being solicited to increase LNG exports to Europe, but the tiny Gulf Emirate already sends much of its gas to Asia. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
In other news, French President Emmanuel Macron has formally announced that he will run for a second term in April's presidential election. In a quote letter to the French Unquote published Thursday on French media websites, Macron said, quote, "I am seeking your trust again," unquote. Macron had indicated he wanted to run in an election scheduled to be held in two rounds on April 10th and April 24th, but his initial campaign plans have changed since Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Polls suggest Macron is the front runner in the race. For more on this story and other breaking news, visit our website at voanews.com. Remember to connect with us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Search for VOA Africa. You are listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinua Adofo in Washington. The United Nations Environmental Program marked its 50-year anniversary Thursday at its headquarters in Nairobi, Kenya. Activists have criticized the organization as being slow to address global threats to the environment, such as pollution and climate change. But at the UN Environment Assembly this week, over 100 nations pledged to negotiate a binding treaty to reduce plastic pollution. Mohamed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
The United Nations Environment Programme marks 50 years this week. The agency's chief, Inga Andersen, said Thursday the agency has contributed to saving the planet from harm and destruction.
We saved millions of lives and protected nature. We showed that environmental multilateralism does deliver. That is a lesson that should inspire us today. Friends, there have been other major achievements. The launch of the scientific body, the IPCC, the phase out of lead in petrol, and just yesterday, the resolution starting the pathway to a global plastic pollution deal to end plastic pollution for good.
The resolution calls for 2 years of negotiations towards a comprehensive international treaty on how to handle the growing problem of plastic waste. The UNEP was formed in Stockholm in 1972 and has been a key player in safeguarding the world's planet, species, wildlife and climate. The UNEP was formed in Stockholm in 1972 and has been a key player in safeguarding the world's planet, species, wildlife and climate. The organization says its mandate is to bring the world together in tackling environmental threats. Addressing leaders, delegates and environmental activists at the UNEP headquarters in Nairobi, Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta praised its work.
Progressively, over the last 50 years, UNEP has led the world understand the centrality of environment in human existence, to appreciate the increased threats to the environment and also the existential threat that exists to our planet. They have also helped us galvanize collective global action to protect our environment.
Wanjira Maathai, the Vice President and Regional Director at the World Resources Institute, said enforcing agreed-upon environment policies and laws has been a challenge.
I think enforcement is usually our biggest challenge because we make commitments, but we don't always follow through with the enforcement. And I think that's the biggest opportunity for us, is to see them through.
Botswana President Mokgweetsi Masisi says implementing environmental laws and the agreement requires greater funding.
Botswana continues to walk in the path provided by multilateral environmental agreements that she is party to. However, with limited resources, filling these commitments continues to remain a challenge. But we stand committed as Botswana. Do not doubt it.
Andersen said her organization needs the support of all countries to achieve and deliver a stable climate and rich nature that benefits all. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
After almost 2 years, Western Australia has lifted the nation's toughest COVID-19 border controls. Double vaccinated international and domestic travelers are now allowed in as the so-called hermit state reconnects with the rest of the world. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
For almost 700 days, Western Australia was cut off from the rest of the country and the world. Most international visitors were banned, as Australia's largest state, which is 10 times the size of the United Kingdom, tried to isolate itself from the pandemic. The state premier, Mark McGowan, said the tough policy had avoided needless deaths, but he acknowledged the pain felt by separated families and businesses. The tough measures did keep infections low, but they were unable to stop a recent surge in Omicron cases. A total of 1,770 cases were reported Wednesday, a new record for Western Australia. But the number of hospitalizations remains relatively low. With almost 99% of the eligible population double vaccinated, authorities have insisted that the time is right to end border restrictions. More than 5,200 people have died. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
This is Science in a Minute.
A team of astronomers led by Caltech have found evidence that two supermassive black holes are engaged in a type of celestial dance that will lead to a powerful, explosive merger in about 10,000 years. This binary supermassive black hole system is located in a galaxy some 9 billion light years away. After 45 years of observations, the astronomers say they found the black holes are orbiting each other once every 2 years. The black holes each have a mass that's hundreds of millions of times that of the Sun and are currently separated by a distance of about 50 times the distance between the Sun and Pluto, roughly 295 billion kilometers. The astronomers say the merger of the two supermassive black holes is expected to shake space and time and release powerful gravitational waves across the universe. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis. Join me and a panel of journalists as we discuss the top stories of the week, including as Russia continues its advancement into Ukraine, oil and gas giants BP and Shell announce they are leaving Russia after spending decades making investments worth billions of dollars in the country. Join us for Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Go beyond the daily headlines with VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. Each weekday at 2105 UTC, join me, Steve Miller, as I put the latest developments into a global context with interviews and analysis. Listen online at voanews.com/flashpoint or in your favorite podcast player.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel. Will U.S. President Joe Biden's annual State of the Union address bolster his political fortunes? Panelists John Fortier and Jim Kessler analyze President Biden's speech as he touts his COVID relief, the nomination of the first black woman to the Supreme Court, U.S. military and humanitarian assistance to beleaguered Ukraine, and his success in rallying allies against Russia's invasion of that country. That's Encounter on The Voice of America. Hello, I'm Carol Castiel. Next up, a conversation with Anna Borshevskaya, senior fellow at the Washington Institute for Near East Peace, about the latest developments in President Vladimir Putin's war against Ukraine. Borshevskaya will address the humanitarian and geopolitical stakes in this asymmetrical conflict, the unity of NATO, the EU, and the United States in punishing Moscow. That's Press Conference USA this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. You can visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voanews.com. Until next time, I am Chinua Ngofa in Washington, wishing you a great weekend.
The
This is the voice of America. Washington, ba ba ba.